This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
Show. I'm your special guest host, Tom Palswitz. We're going to have a great guest coming on in a minute here, but we did want to jump over to Tom, who's on the phone, who's been waiting very patiently. So, Tom, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I've been thinking about why the Democrats lost, and I think there's a lot of reasons, but I think one reason that's not really been talked about is the abortion issue. And Kamala talked about it quite a bit, and how she, how she wanted to make things better and get the laws back to what they had been. I don't think that's a winning strategy. And what I mean by that is that I know there's a lot of people who are not pro-abortion and never will be. So I think the Democrats need to come to a middle point somehow with the right and be more pro-life, maybe not as far as the right is, but more pro-life, including adoption. I have some friends who adopted 6 children, and it costs them like $20,000-$30,000 for each one. So I would like to see the Democrats become more open to working with the right on that issue and finally resolving. And I think that by doing that, it would take that issue away from the Republicans and give the Democrats a more fighting chance to win.
Well, I appreciate the thoughts, Tom. Thanks for calling in. So just a quick note on that. I think there was quite a few referendums and initiatives across the country when it came to defining timelines on abortion that got an overwhelming support in a lot of areas. But there were a lot of voters who voted for abortion rights and Donald Trump at the same time. And I think that's one of those things I took away from this last election, that people care about abortion, but there's something else going on that led them down to Donald Trump. So appreciate the call, Tom. Thank you very much. Want to introduce my next guest. He is State Senator Chris Larson. So I've known Chris for a while. He was very gracious when I decided to run and helped me understand the lay of the land when it came to what it all meant. He's been in Madison for a while. I think he's seen some up and down changes, which we'll definitely talk about. But the other part is he is a fellow UWM Panther. So Chris, welcome to the show.
Go Panthers.
Go Panthers.
Thanks for having me, Tom. Yeah, it's a, I was literally just down there. I'm always down at UW-Milwaukee, and, I feel like no matter how old I get, I always feel like there's going to be a professor that pumps up from around the corner and be like, aren't you supposed to be in class? What are you doing out here?
Yeah, and I don't have that fear because most of the professors I had are no longer there. So I think they probably,
they probably retired.
I think the last one that was there when I was there was Mr. Fisher, who taught higher level accounting. And I think he just recently retired. So
still a few. There's still a few. When the professors are a lot younger than me, there's a few of them. And it's like, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. But yeah, thanks for having me on. I know you were just talking about the election, and I do want to say that up front, as people are everyone's doing their analysis, and we do the American tradition that the side that lost, no matter how close it was, no matter how many of the other factors are involved, that they're like, well, throw out the baby and the bathwater and everything else. And if you don't start over completely, like, what are you doing?
Yes.
Obviously, in a very close election, there's all different types of things that affect it. But I do want to say the good thing, like the things that did work in Wisconsin is what we did in the state Senate. We were able to elect 4 new Democrats, the Wisconsin State Senate, which is not something we usually get a chance to say. And it means we're on the path of being able to get to the majority in the Wisconsin State Senate for the first time in 16 years.
Yes. So very exciting. It's 4 out of 33, which I think when you think about it, that's a huge swing. Yep. And the same thing happened on the assembly side. There were 10 seats that flipped on the assembly side. And when you think about Wisconsin, the last 3 presidential elections have been razor thin. And yes. to have that big of a swing, Chris, what do you attribute that to?
I mean, the fact that we had fairer maps for the first time in, gosh, 12 years. So 12 years ago was when the first maps went into effect, the gerrymandered ones. These are the ones that Republicans basically set it. So no matter what happens at the top of the ticket, which, you know, in Wisconsin usually means it's going to be a 50-50 election. It's going to be super close. But of course, they didn't want to have a 50-50 legislature because there's a chance they don't end up being the one with the gavel, you know, deciding what bills move forward and who gets ignored. So they rigged the maps so that they would have about 2/3 of the votes. And that's what they had in our state Senate. They had 2/3, even though we're 50-50 at the top of the ticket. They had 22 of the 33. And then in the assembly, it was pretty much that equivalent, 63 of the 99. So stacked, right? Not close to 50-50. This is like, it's the equivalent, you know how like if you have kids, and you know you have kids, you end up, you know, saying, okay, the fairest system is you cut, one cuts the cookie.
Right.
And the other one chooses.
Yep. Yep.
This is the equivalent of like they get to cut the cookie and then they get to keep which side they want. So it was 2/3. Yep. That seems fair.
Yeah. And I know that fight, and I know a lot of you listening were in on that, is, you know, it's the, I call it the battle for democracy, because, and I love the way you said it, Chris, fairer maps. They're not the fairest maps we could have, but they're fairer. But it does, I mean, we're a purple state. I think everything that shows is that every single, either statewide or federal election, they're going to be tight. They're going to be close. And that's the way the assembly should play out, and that's the way the state Senate races should play out. But I know Robin Voss was very, he was proud of being able to say, you know, our people who run are the best, and that's why they're chosen. And I haven't seen any really good quotes from him about what happened, otherwise to say that, you know, the Democrats were talking about getting a majority and they didn't. And therefore, the people rejected them, which is, once again, I don't, you know, I like to call that political theater. But what ramifications will this election have on the ability to come together to start solving some issues?
Yeah, I mean, I hope that we do. But again, you still have Robin Voss. I think they're going to elect him as their leader again. And just to be clear, these are not fully fair maps. These are the Republican maps. The Republicans voted for these. No Democrat. I think maybe one or two. But these are largely the Republicans that carried these maps forward because they were the best for them. Hence, 50-50 election, they still have 54 of the seats in the assembly. So they didn't lose their majority or get it close to 50-50. I do hope that we actually have a chance to get stuff done. I met with another senator yesterday to talk about bills regarding healthcare affordability and making sure that our hospitals actually earn their nonprofit status, which isn't the case right now. They end up getting more of a benefit that they give out to the community, which,
yes,
you know, by most people's definition of what a nonprofit is supposed to be, that's not it. And they haven't been doing that for years, and they've been giving the cash to executives and operating like a corporation. If they want to do that, they have to pay taxes like a corporation. So that's a big one, moving up nursing ratios or establishing nursing ratios minimums so that we actually, you walk into a unit knowing that you're going to be covered, or your parents are going to be covered. But I digress. There's opportunity for a bunch of different bills to actually move forward if common sense reigns. If that's going to happen anywhere, that's going to be in the state Senate. So we'll see. I mean, Robin Voss, he's probably going to block a lot of stuff, but that doesn't mean we're not going to try.
But aren't there enough people who are sitting in a district now where they're not guaranteed reelection, and they're going to now have to bring back some results to their constituents? So their constituents go, okay, because I've always felt, and we've talked about this a lot, but I've always felt like you should run on ideas, you should get reelected on results. And we haven't had that here in Wisconsin for a long time. It's been running as a party and then rerunning as a party. And now I think there's an opportunity here, because it doesn't take that many senators and or assembly people to be able to say, wait a minute, I need to work on that issue because it's important to my constituents. And healthcare, I think, is one of those. You know, I'm on the ACA. So, you know, because I'm a small business owner, there's no place else for me to go to get healthcare coverage. And that's what I have to do to be able to figure that out. What are the chances of Medicaid money actually coming into Wisconsin in the next couple of years?
We're doing the Medicaid expansion?
Yes.
I mean, we should always pick that fight because it's one of the easiest fights to win. And the logic on the other side, it doesn't make any sense. We literally pay more money to cover less people. and there's federal dollars that are being just sitting there, going to other states that we decide, we're like, oh no, let us spend, because we would rather have our taxpayers cover this bill. Like, you know, imagine that in a restaurant situation, if they're like, oh yeah, no, this is covered. There's a coupon that makes sure that right. this is actually taken care of by the federal government the same way they cover everyone else. You can cover more people that way, but we actually cover less people and pay more for it than if we would have expanded it. So it really literally doesn't make any sense. And it brings more money. It frees up money that we're spending on that we could be spending on public education, on yes. Improving our natural environment, on, you know, you name it, to the tune of over $1 billion now over the last 10 years that we've dragged our feet. So hope springs eternal. We always bring that one up. If you're up for a fight and bringing it up, I'm up for a fight and bringing it up.
Excellent. Because I think it needs to be brought at least to back into the swing of things for people to be able to say, wait a minute, how many of my constituents are covered by the ACA? Because right now it's called the Affordable Care Act, but I call it the Accessible Care Act, because for some people it's not affordable. And, you know, and premiums keep going up and things keep changing. And I think it's good to take a step back and go, okay, we've made it accessible. Now we need to make it affordable so people get better health care and actually get healthier. So
yes, absolutely. Making sure those plans on there are actually things that cover the needs that you have.
Exactly.
Yes, absolutely. That's the route that we should be going. And I think that, you know, if folks are listening to your show, there's a pretty good chance they're in tune with politics and how it's been operating over the last 10 years. And there's been what has been common knowledge and has been true is like that political gravity doesn't work, that like lobbying doesn't work, that public pressure, that they can just ignore it. There was a famous quote from the Republicans when they passed their gerrymandered maps. You might remember it: ignore the public, ignore the public comments. And that has been their mantra. But now they've shown, like, two of the most powerful Republicans in the legislature, both of them on the Joint Finance Committee, both of them among the richest members of the state Senate, were defeated 2 weeks ago, right? And so all of their colleagues are looking around and saying, wait a second, if these two folks who had been operating with, you know, just doing whatever they wanted are suddenly gone, they might want to think twice about ignoring the bills that Democrats bring up. By the way, less than 5% of Democratic bills get a hearing, and less than 1% have passed over the last 10 years. So I'm expecting that ratio to change.
And that would, I think that to me is one of those litmus tests that people can watch and see if things are really changing. That should be a way to say, all right, more bills are coming to see the light of day and things are happening. So got to take a break. You are listening to the Maggie Dawn Show with your guest host, Tom Palsowitz.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back. This is the Maggie Dawn Show and your guest host, Tom Palsowitz, with my special guest, Chris Larson, State Senator Chris Larson. I do want to touch on, we did get a text from one of our listeners about the last segment, and they are opposed to what we were talking about. And I won't go into the details about what they said. But it part of it is, it's an understanding of what it really means and how do you break through the fear of what they think is going to happen if somebody goes to the wrong bathroom. But I won't touch on that subject anymore. Chris, another question for you. One of the things I've been thinking about is, what are the biggest issues statewide that you think can get tackled in this next legislative session? What are the biggest things statewide you think that can actually get some movement on? Of all the issues there are, there's a ton.
There's a lot. Yeah, no, there's a lot. I would say the biggest one that I think that we can change, and frankly, we need to change, is how we're funding public education in the state. It has been repeatedly cut over and over, and there was all kinds of excuses. Originally, it was cut under Doyle in 2009's budget when there was a huge $7 billion deficit that they were facing.
Right.
Walker came in, he cut it even more, $526 per pupil. That was per year, and that took years to be able to restore. And actually, if you account for inflation, we still haven't gotten there yet.
Right.
And if you account for the losses in between, we're about $3,000 behind per pupil. And even in the last budget, there was a minuscule increase, that didn't cover for all the years that we missed. So if I was going to say one specific, it would be the public education parity, specifically about making sure that public schools are getting the same amount of money for special education reimbursement that voucher schools are getting. Voucher schools get 90% of their costs if they add them up and send it in. They can actually get more than that, but that's an aside. It's on paper. They get 90%. Public schools, it was 31%. It was supposed to go up to 33%, but you know what? There's a report that just came out this week, Tom, and it's actually going to, and they patted themselves on the back. It went up.
Yes.
It went up. Turns out, no, because they didn't put dollars in something called sum certain. They put in a set amount. And so because more and more schools are drawing off of those funds, the number's actually going to drop, not from 31 that it was at, but down below 30. So, and that means every public school that's covering special education has to pull those dollars, 70%, from other areas of study. So they're shortchanging our kids. Property taxes are going up as a result. You've seen a explosion of referendums all over the place over this. You're going to continue to see that until the state steps in and fulfills their obligation to fund every child with a quality public education. And we've got the funds to do it, $4 billion surplus. And we're spending over $800 million annual on a second outside education system that's less accountable, the voucher system. So we have the money to be able to fund every child, make sure they have a quality education, and we don't have an excuse not to do it anymore.
Exactly. But Chris, what do you say to the people who criticize spending more money with, you know, if we're not getting results for the money we're already spending, why would we put more to it? What do you say to that?
Yeah, I mean, if you don't want to fund education, you're funding ignorance, right? And this is like anything else. If you're saying, oh, this doesn't work, think of that in any other form of just logic. Oh, my car is not working right now. I guess I'm going to cut funding to it.
Yes.
Doesn't work.
Right.
Oh, the Packers, they're not able to, Packers are doing great, so I won't poo-poo them. But the Brewers, the Brewers are not able to have the lineup. You know, what's the saying is Ananasio needs to loosen up his wallet and invest more. There's nobody who's saying like, well, we don't want to throw good money after bad. He should really teach those Brewers a lesson by paying them less.
Yes, we should cut salaries, right? Yeah.
Right, exactly. So why are our kids any different? I think it's a cop-out for folks who just don't want to fund other kids. I think that for the most part, people, when you have the conversation about what a community is and how a community should be taken care of, you want every child in that community to be taken care of, because you're going to interact with them on some level, whether that be at a grocery store, whether that be them making your food, whether that be somebody that you're going to work for someday. You want everyone to have a base level of civic understanding, of critical thinking skills, and the ability to be able to make good decisions throughout their life. It's part of a social contract in a state, and it's a minimum standard for what we should do. If you're not doing that, can you really say you give a damn about your neighbor if you're not willing to make sure that their kids have a quality education?
Yeah, and that to me is the most interesting thing, right? Is if you're not unwilling to invest in education, where would you be willing to invest? And I think you hit on it, like the sheer number of referendums that came out, not just building referendums, operating referendums, you know, just to get enough money to keep the school open, you know, fix the air conditioning and the heating and all the other things that need fixing. You know, one of the
234, things, a record. There was a record. 234
referendums. Yeah, and it's only going up. One of the things I saw, though, is Milwaukee County was able to, I think, take a step back and be able to advocate for the understanding that all counties were under fiscal pressure in order to get the sales tax passed. Is there some way to sort of bring every school district together to say, hey, we really need this funding? Because it doesn't seem like there's necessarily one voice right now. And maybe that's just me, but is there a way to get sort of a unified voice to say that we're at a critical juncture here? and we need to do something different.
I think it's happening. Honestly, Tom, I think it's happening. You're right that everyone was kind of divided in their own fiefdoms, right? And you hear this saying from all the different school districts kind of in whispered, hushed tones that if we don't pass this referendum, then we're going to be less attractive as a place to raise a family, to attract people to live here, to attract businesses, et cetera. And I think people started to realize, wait a second, every school district is saying this because every school district is being underfunded, particularly the rural schools. And now there's danger of another school district closing that was announced today. And on top of that, like, the superintendent of public instruction, her name is Jill Underley. She finished one term. She's running for another term. And she is running on a bold agenda to be able to say we need to make sure that they get to 90% reimbursement because it helps rural schools, it helps urban schools, it helps suburban schools, and on top of that, it helps lower property taxes because otherwise people have to fund it on their own.
Yep, and all great points. I know we got to head out to another break. Chris, I know we talked a little bit about education. I want to talk a lot more about education. I also want to talk about some of the other things that might be able to happen, including marijuana legislation and legalization coming up. So keep on listening. This is the Maggie Dawn Show.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
Hey, mister, where you headed? Are you in a hurry? Welcome back. This is the Maggie Dawn Show with your guest host, Tom Palswitz, and my special guest for the next half hour, State Senator Chris Larson. Before we get into it, the phone lines are open. So 855-75-CIVIC, that's 855-752-4842. So if you got something to ask myself or Chris or just want to talk, give us a call. So Chris, I know we were touching on education. We touched a little bit on healthcare. What do you think is the next major issue, you think, from a statewide standpoint, that could see the light of day or you will be caucusing for?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, there's a ton. I will say one of the big ones that I'm going to be focused on is on having common sense gun laws. Given my best friend died by suicide just about 2 weeks ago, and one of the last things he did as a state legislature is talking about how we needed to have the 48-hour waiting period for handgun purchases, and having ERPO extreme risk protection orders laws in place to make sure that people who are at risk to themselves or others are not going to be at risk to themselves or others with a firearm. So those are things that he advocated for, and having a conversation with his mother, Phyllis. I know that she's been talking to legislators, and that's one where these are common sense changes. They save lives. They don't save every life in every instance, but they do end up giving time. 85% of gun suicides are and attempts end up being successful. These are mostly men that are doing it, whereas other methods that are less successful, people end up recovering from, but you don't get that option with a firearm. So we've lost two legislators now, or legislators or former legislators from this in just the last few years. So hopefully this is fresh on folks' minds to be able to say, hey, this is just a common sense one that we can get through. So
yeah,
I've sent a letter to every legislator in the that was elected on last Tuesday. So
excellent.
We'll see how they respond.
Yeah, and of course you're talking about Waukee City Alderman Jonathan Brostoff. And Jonathan, I just have a quick story on Jonathan of my own. First time I ran for Congress, my campaign manager knew Jonathan really well, and he said you gotta sit down and talk to Jonathan because he's going to be able to give you some really good tips about what you should concentrate on, especially out in that Red Waukesha area. And I just remember him grilling me. And part of it was, I think he thought maybe I was like a Republican, but he wanted to really drill in and get my bona fides to say, is this guy really a Democrat or not? And we found so much common ground. But what I really liked was the way he thought, but more importantly, how much he was willing to stand up for what's important. So, Chris, I just want to say, I think this is an excellent thing to rally people around at this point, because it's fresh in people's minds. It should be, at least. And it's the one, maybe one good thing that could come out of this is helping potential other people not end up in the same place. So appreciate that. So what else? I mean, there's a whole bunch of other, you know, statewide issues. I alluded to marijuana. Like, where are we at as a state? Because I think Robin Voss has even talked about maybe medical marijuana or anything else. But, you know, when you think about our state, we're surrounded by legalized states. Yeah, and it's foolish to think that people from this state aren't going to other states.
They absolutely are. They have the data. They rub it in our face all the time.
Yes.
The governor of Illinois is like, thanks, guys. Thanks for coming down. He you know, what's his name? Pritzker. He gave a speech I was at last year, and he was like, thanks, guys. Good to see you on your own home turf. You know. And then, luckily, he couldn't talk too much smack because he's a Bears fan. So
right,
they take a lot of our cash. As a result of that, people crossing over the border there, people crossing into Michigan.
Yes.
It's now legal for medical in Iowa, and then under certain circumstances in Minnesota. As far as the Midwest goes, there's only one other state that hasn't done this. It's us and Mike Pence's Indiana.
Yes.
Everyone else has figured this out. And as a result, it's still illegal in our state. The fines have been greatly reduced in Milwaukee, but this is still 52% of drug arrests, and the most recent data are marijuana possession charges. So this is still something people are getting picked up for, 12,882 in 2022. So people are getting picked up for this when there's so many other things that people should be they should be spending their time on. This, it's diverting resources away from where they should be spent. And of course, the impacts of this are not divided equally among the races. This is something that is used to target friends in the minority community. This is just ridiculous, right? And we're missing tons of revenue as a result. We're missing the opportunity cost of all those people who suddenly have criminal records or having trouble to be able to find a job and operate, to be able to get housing. You just exacerbate so many problems. And frankly, the rest of the country has not fallen apart at the seams, despite there being some great efforts by the anti-marijuana crowd. I mean, they're still trying to screen the Reefer Madness movie. They still had some folks at the Capitol as recently as 2 years ago talking about how this leads to psychosis, but this is a hugely minority opinion. And frankly, you have 24 other states where it is recreationally legal and 38 states where medical is appropriate, is acceptable. And those states are not falling apart at the seams. If anything, they're doing just fine.
Yeah, and they're taking in lots of money. So all these things you mentioned are fact-based points that the Republicans still have not moved from their position, even when confronted with these fact-based points. What is the next talking point to help them come around?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think this is one where political gravity kicking in should help, because 63% of voters want this, including a majority of Republicans in our state, according to the last Marquette poll that asked this in February. So this is one where before they could kind of shake their heads and be pious and say, you know, not for me. We're gonna pass. This is one where they should be listening to the public, because it's just dumb. It's just dumb that we're not moving in this direction. And if anything, if there's a worry about the alcohol lobby of the Tavern League, you know, look, you can look at other states. This is something where we shouldn't end up barring one over the other. People obviously shouldn't, you know, the people who are doing this should do it in the comfort of their own home and not be out on the streets driving.
Yes.
Which is the real problem, which is why we should be doing something more about drunk driving. I would hope that we're not the last state to move forward in this direction. I was a proud co-sponsor of this bill every session. I wish that some of the Republicans in their whispered tones in the Capitol get the courage this next session to speak up and sign on and move this forward, because if it actually comes to a vote, I think it's going to be lopsided. I think you'll have a few Republicans who will finally jump on board, but they're dragging their feet. They have these silly sessions. I think one of them did a hearing. Do you remember this on 420?
Yes.
Last year, like when we were out of session, I was like,
right.
What are you doing?
What are you doing?
We know you're not going to do anything.
Thanks for the, you know, the political theater, the political show, but you're not going to do anything about it. So, you know, given that, because you've talked about healthcare, you've talked about education, you've talked about gun violence prevention, now we've talked about marijuana. These issues, I think, you know, every single poll I've ever seen, a majority of Wisconsinites agree about something should be done and sometimes agree on exactly what should be done. At what point do those arguments start to filter into the assembly in the state Senate now that things are closer? And maybe not only for this 2-year cycle, but maybe the next 2-year cycle, because there's a lot more at-risk Republicans who are going to have something to prove and have to find some courage to break away from the way things were. So do you have any glimpse into that? Are there any back channel talkings about maybe things will be a little bit different in this go around?
I mean, we're going to see. We'll find out. The committee assignments haven't been announced just yet. And so we don't even know who's all going to be on. We don't know what the committees are. We don't know who's going to be on which committees. We don't know how much we're going to be meeting. I do think that the Senate is a more rational chamber, and you can actually have people who have conversations. Mm-hmm. Whereas in the assembly, it's, you know, there are folks who are still clinging to grudges from over a decade ago, and like that's impeding their ability to just respond to their constituents. I would say this is an era, right? Especially at the federal level, we're going to get frustrated the more you pay attention. Every news alert is just like a punch in the ear.
Yes.
This is a chance where, you know what, there's hope in Wisconsin because we have courts that actually recognize the law, not in favor of one party over another, but fairly. The legislature is getting fairer. It'll probably go through. Democrats can win the majority in both houses next session. And then you have a Democrat as governor. So you actually have some call for sanity, and we have a surplus to be able to invest in the things that have been ignored for too long. So just, that's it, you know, just keeping whatever those issues are, and people are thinking of what's important to them. They should contact their legislators about them. You know, healthy school meals for all is one of the easiest ones that should pass. It is literally just making sure that kids have enough to eat for breakfast and lunch so that they can actually operate.
You think that one would be a no-brainer, but there'll probably be a little bit of a fight. But yeah, you know, one of the things you know that's interesting is you now have 10 new assembly people and 4 new state senators coming in without the baggage of the past. How do you use that? How do you help them maybe create a voice and try to create some relationships where maybe it was hard for a guy like you who's been around for a while to break through that? You know, is there anything that you can help them do, or do you see some hope there because they're coming in without that past and they can maybe get something done?
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of them are coming in here with the expectation you can actually get things done. And that is common, right? That people come in, they campaign on those, the things that should be happening. And, you know, we had a caucus once already. I've talked to the new 4 Democrats who are coming in a couple of times, you know, during the campaign and since then, and how they're setting up their offices, of how they're going to be focusing on some of the issues that were brought up during the campaign. And you can hear the fight. You can hear when there's things coming up that lobbyists are asking for, and they're like, okay, I don't know what that is. I'm not sure where that's going to go. But when you actually ask, what are people asking at the doors? What do you actually want to see happen? And the passion about, you know, making sure that healthcare is more affordable. Again, public education funding is a huge one. That's not just a talking point, but it's one that people are seeing viscerally with their kids. You know, doing more to fund the arts is one that somebody brought up. We're 50th in the country for arts funding.
Yes,
which obviously spreads to our creative market. We could be doing a heck of a lot better on that. Preservation of natural resources, of making sure that those things are preserved for the next generation. We've been moving in the wrong direction for that for a long time on those. But you know, there's a long list of things that have been languishing for years.
Yeah,
and now's a chance for the public to actually be heard.
And I'll throw one more into that bucket: regional transportation in the Milwaukee area. You know, I live in Waukesha. We go to Milwaukee a lot. I know there's a lot of people that go from Milwaukee to the outlying counties on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. I read once, and this was a while ago, there were 60,000 people that every day went from Waukesha County into Milwaukee County and vice versa. So mm-hmm. there was this big movement of people. And, you know, every time I go downtown, my wife is sick of hearing me saying this and hearing it, but there should be a train right between the eastbound and westbound 94 lanes. There should be a train right there to move people. So what are the chances of regional transportation having some kind of, I guess, player impact here in the next 2 years?
Over the next 2 years, it's going to be tough, just because I know it's something Republicans aren't that big of fans of. And then the transportation secretary designee, Mr. Road Rules himself, even though he's from Wisconsin, I'm not sure he is going to allocate dollars for smart transit, of being able to say, hey, you know, a lot, even if you just don't look at the historical preferences of people wanted this for a long time, just look in the other cars while you're driving along. Everyone's looking at their damn phone.
Oh, my goodness.
No one wants to be driving. If they have someone else that can drive everybody, they're doing us all a great service. This is literally a public service to keep those people from getting into accidents because they're looking at their darn phone the whole time. They don't want to be driving.
While they're driving. I know. I see it all the time, too. And it's, do you think there is a way to start getting some kind of group together to start thinking about it? And I'm gonna plant that question because we got to go to a break here. Because I think, at least for me, Milwaukee's the heartbeat of Wisconsin, and when your heart isn't working the way it needs to, everything else is impacted. So I think it's important to understand, like, how do we make Milwaukee County really thrive? And by doing that, transportation, education, healthcare, all those things come together, and that helps out everybody. So you are listening to the Maggie Dawn Show. It is your guest host, Tom Palswitz, and my special guest, State Senator Chris Larson. The number is 855-752-4842. Let's hear from you.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
You are listening to the Maggie Dawn Show. This is your guest host, Tom Palswitz, with my special guest, State Senator Chris Larson. We were just touching on Milwaukee County. I know, Chris, you grew up in Milwaukee County. You went to high school in Milwaukee County. You went to your secondary education in Milwaukee County. What are the things that can be done in the Milwaukee 7 that you think you can influence from the state level that could really create a much better economy and environment that would go toward helping the rest of the state? What are some of those things?
Yeah, I mean, one of the big ones is making sure the college is more accessible and more affordable. So obviously we talked about K-12 public education, but I do think higher education is one where it is, it's a pillar of what makes Wisconsin, Wisconsin.
Yes.
When people think of our state, they think of us as being one where education is valued all across the board, but particularly in our colleges. And I think making it more affordable, more accessible is key. There's a lot of folks who are deciding not to go, and I think we need to turn that around due to the cost. There's just been this idea where we can keep charging more and more and more, the state cutting their share of the funding and then assuming that loans are going to fill up the difference. Well, a lot of people are realizing that the loans are way too high, even though they're giving them this money. It turns out it's not free.
It's not free, yes.
Right. And they're, you know, like, despite efforts at the federal level to be able to extinguish student loan debt so that an entire generation can be unleashed and unburdened by it, that has languished. So I think changing that is going to be a magnet to attracting working professionals to the state. And I would also include in that, right, technical education, of making sure that continues to be, it's more of a bang for its buck already, but making sure that's maintained. There is more dedicated funding for that. comes from the local property tax, but making sure that that's available and still not out of reach for folks, I think is going to be huge. I mean, honestly, I'd love to see a huge marketing campaign to be able to sell Milwaukee to the rest of the country,
yes.
Especially considering the last election results of if we can just figure out how to get about 22,000 people to move to Milwaukee, you know, from other parts of the country. If you like, you know, great underdog sports teams that where you can actually be an owner. I've got my certificate up here.
Right. You can own an NFL team. The housing is affordable. You have a great park system. I mean, the things go on and on. One of the things I always think about, though, you know, I have three grown children and two of them have moved away. And I can't fault them for doing it because the opportunities and the advantages they can get someplace else. But they can't buy housing anywhere else. And I think that's one of the things that we can offer to people, especially young people, to get into a home and become part of a neighborhood and become part of the fabric of that community. I think that's something that we could do. Chris, I know that, you know, I've said before, you've been in Madison for a while. Do you feel like the next, let's call it 6 to 8 years, could be a dramatic difference? Or do you feel like we're still in for more of the same when it comes to Madison?
It should be. But honestly, there's things that can happen, right? And I feel like one of the reasons that I continue to stay in the state Senate and have for all these years is I have a lot of the institutional memory of what it was like when I got there, of the things that I had hoped to do when I was getting into office, and then frankly, just how we have shifted away from what the priorities actually should be, what the public wants, and where it is now, the influence of money in our state has ended up shifting things so far to the right, and just listening to what big business wants as being the priority, while not doing public hearings or ignoring, you know, your base. And unfortunately that definitely falls on partisan lines in some cases, but not all, right? And so even the influence of money means that lobbyists are suddenly become a lot friendlier with Democrats and hoping that they can tap the brakes on actually changing the things that would actually fundamentally help the public. So I say that, and I think it's worth talking about over the next 2 years, because we may end up getting the majority, but that doesn't necessarily mean that anything is going to pass or change unless you elect the right type of leaders who are talking about issues that matter to you, about public education, healthcare affordability, of moving forward on regional transit authorities, of reversing the harms that have attacked unions, increasing the minimum wage, making it easier to join a union, making it easier to make sure that you are earning what you deserve, making sure that our parks are invested in a way that you have a higher quality of life. All of those things, the things that we've discussed, the things that have been discussed for the last 10 years, that's what's going to be determined, and we need to start talking about it now. Yes. Granted, the Republicans might not pass it, but that needs to be an agenda. We cannot, this last election, there's a lot of lessons, Tom, right?
Yes.
One of them should definitely be, we cannot just be the opposite of what Donald Trump is. We cannot just be the fallback to that. We actually have to chart a clear course, and that'll determine if things change, or that'll determine if it's just the change of the name at the top, but no laws change.
Right. And I think it, like I said before, it's a unique opportunity to possibly get things done that haven't been possible before. I am particularly excited by Angelito Tenorio, who won the 14th district. Angelito worked on my campaign in 2018, and it's nice to see him have a seat at the table in the assembly representing West Dallas. So I think that'll be great for Milwaukee County, and I know it'll be great for West Dallas. So, Chris, want to thank you. Appreciate you having on and taking some time out of your busy schedule. I know with a whole bunch of stuff going on, and take care. And we're going to be watching to see if there's some movement, which I think will be fantastic. So thanks for coming on.
Thanks.
And as we head out, I think one of the things I just want to end with is going back to a democracy, if you can keep it. So figure out what you can do. Figure out what you can do for yourself and figure out what you can do for your community. So thanks for listening. And Maggie will be back soon.
The national news cycle never stops. but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.